Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Our quote for the day from Aristotle: if liberty and equality, as is thought by some, are chiefly to be found in democracy, they will be best attained when all persons alike share in the government to the utmost. Your opportunity today to share in the government to the utmost, to speak with a United States senator, as always, the first hour of our Friday program, Senator Bernie Sanders. I think of him as America's senator, although when I lived in Vermont, I definitely thought of him as my representative. Bernie, by the way, sanders.senate.gov, his website. Our websites, of course, tomhartman.com, airamerica.com. You can pick up our live video web stream there, as well as our audio stream and chat room and everything else. Bernie, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Always great to have you with us. So Senator Obama is somewhere between Mick Jagger and JFK in Berlin a couple days ago.
Well, I think it kind of blew the American people away. To see the contrast between the reception that Obama got in Europe, 200,000 people coming out in Germany, and the kind of reception that President Bush has gotten when he has traveled abroad, where they need 200,000 police to keep protesters away. And it tells us that the people all over the world are hungering for American leadership. They're hungering for the kind of idealism that the United States has given this world for centuries now. And I think Obama touched that nerve, made the point that this whole planet has got to come together to address some of the very, very, very serious problems we face, whether it's global warming, whether it's international terrorism. And I think that's the message that this planet wants to hear. They don't want to hear that the most powerful nation on Earth is going to ignore everybody else. We're going to do it alone. And it's remarkable that the kind of support that Obama got, polls in Europe, you know, show he was running, I don't know, 8-1, 10-1. Better than McCain. I saw something where something like 30% of the members of the British Conservative Party, who were public about their views, indicated support for Obama. That's the Conservative Party.
Right.
So I think that's...
And what a contrast to when George Bush went... two contrasts. Number one, when George Bush went to Germany, the security patrol, they had to clear a full square mile area. Nobody, he wasn't allowed to get near anybody. Here's Obama standing in front of 200,000 people without even a bulletproof vest or bulletproof glass in front of him. I mean, it's
people
just
people understand the enormous problems facing this planet. They are sick and tired of right-wing extremism, sick and tired of the philosophy that says that the United States can do it alone, and we can do anything we want, anytime we want to do it. Yeah. And it's just sitting there waiting to happen. And I think that's the message of what Obama did.
And the other thing that I thought was interesting and frankly a little sad, Bernie, and I'd like to get your take on this. When I first saw the news report that at the same time that Obama was standing in front of 200,000 screaming Germans, John McCain was visiting a German restaurant in Columbus, Ohio, where five people showed up to meet with him. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was from The Onion, a satire site. His campaign has got to be incredibly incompetent to set up that kind of a contrast.
Well, let me say something about that, Tom. I think there are a lot of people who are, counting their, thinking that this election is over and that Obama has won. I don't believe that.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be a very tough election. I was noticing that Obama has already, his campaign, not Obama, McCain's campaign in Florida has ads on the air with a split screen of Fidel Castro and Obama. It is going to be incredibly nasty. And what is disturbing is, given the enormous problems facing this country in terms of the economy, in terms of healthcare, global warming, our national debt, foreign policy, all of these issues, you have a candidate who in almost every respect, not every respect, but almost every respect, is going to follow in George Bush's footsteps.
Yeah.
And given the fact that the overwhelming majority of the American people are saying, my God, this country is in the worst shape that we have been in for decades and decades, maybe since the Great Depression, we've got to move in a new direction. It is astounding to me, it really is, that in some of these national polls, you have McCain 1 point behind, 3 points behind, even five points behind.
Two possible explanations, and I'd love your thoughts on this, Bernie. One, that whenever you do a poll, probably 80% of the people you're polling have not been paying attention to politics at all, and you know it just doesn't happen until the last couple of weeks of an election. Or two, that I am constantly, I don't know if people are forwarding this to you or if your staff is sharing these with you or if you're getting them, but Republicans that I know or people that I know who are on Republican mailing lists, and I'm on a couple as well, every day there's a new snarky email out about Obama. The one that came out yesterday that was spammed to literally millions and millions of people. I mean, this is Lee Atwater kind of politics. It was about how Obama snubbed our troops when he was in Afghanistan, and he sneered at, you know, and this is allegedly written by a soldier. As he walked by and refused to shake my hand, he sneered at me. Right.
And this goes out to millions of people.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think this is the equivalent of the push polls that took down McCain in 2000 in South Carolina.
Well, of course. I mean, these guys, they have nothing to say in terms of public policy. Right.
Right.
Virtually nothing to say. How do they win the election? It will be in one way or another. They'll use these 527 organizations where they get a lot of money from very wealthy people. To make personal attacks on both Obama and his wife, because they can't debate the important national issue. So I don't think that this is a slam dunk by any means. And I think what we have got to do, and what I intend to do, you know, running around this country, is just going over the issues. And the media, as you know, Tom, we've discussed this very often. I mean, there'll be more articles, for example, on when will McCain announce his vice presidential candidate?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? No one really cares. He'll announce it.
Yeah.
It'll be somebody, and that's fine. The 15 articles about the timing of when he is going to be doing it, he's now speculating, getting front page stories in order to deflect attention away from Obama in Germany, rather than how many articles will there be about what does Senator McCain have to say about health care?
Right.
What does Senator McCain have to say about tax breaks for billionaires?
Right.
What does Senator McCain have to say about foreign policy? So what, you know, the point that you made is, I think, you know, as a nation, it is no great secret that the media does a horrendous job in dealing with real issues. And many people are going to get sucked into the fact, oh, my goodness, I heard that Obama sneered at our troops.
Right.
You know, totally nonsensical, and there will be personal attacks. And what we have got to do is keep raising the real issues impacting the American people. And if you are concerned about the collapse of the middle class and the growing gap between the rich and the poor, and the fact that we have the highest rate of childhood poverty, understand that McCain wants to give even more tax breaks to the rich. And then he says he wants to move us toward a balanced budget. Well, you know what that means? That means a slashing of virtually every important federal program that impacts the middle class and working families of this country. That's
right.
What it means.
Everything but the Pentagon.
That's right. And then when Mr. McCain, Senator McCain, says when he discusses health care, basically it is exactly the same non-policies that President Bush has given us for the last 7.5 years, which has resulted in over 8 million more Americans losing the health insurance, costs soaring, lack of primary health care access for 56 million Americans, and having a system in which, in terms of the outcomes, life expectancy, infant mortality, access to health care, we rank way, way, way behind many other countries, despite the fact that we spend twice as much per capita. What is McCain's view? Continue the status quo. And if people are happy with health care under Bush, I guess we can vote for Senator McCain. And certainly on civil liberties. I know many callers to this show are very, very concerned that what civil liberties the kinds of attacks on civil liberties and constitutional
habeas corpus.
Habeas corpus, you know, and McCain's views, not very different from Bush's, and on it goes. So I guess if people want to continue another 4 years of Bush's policies, McCain is the candidate to do that. But we need in this country to have a real debate about real issues. And I think once we can get that discussion going, that conversation going, I expect and hope that Obama will win by a whole lot. But
that's going to require the corporate media that's more interested in eyeballs and advertising revenue than issues to start dealing with issues, which is going to be a challenge.
That is the problem. The problem is if we deal with personality, if we sit around day after day wondering when Mr. McCain is going to announce his vice presidential candidate, then we've got some real problems.
Yes. Exactly. Or was that a terrorist fist jab? You know, all this kind of made-up news. Okay, Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, your opportunity to ask a question of a United States Senator. Bernie will be taking your calls for the rest of the hour, 866-303-2270. 16 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, fighting to pass the Employee Free Choice Act. You can find out more at teamster.org. And a tip of the hat and thanks to the Teamsters for helping sponsor our program. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, taking your calls at 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Rich in Connecticut, you are on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders, during the 1990-91 recession and the 2000-2001 recession, the news agencies were reporting that the GDP was actually growing, just slightly, but it was growing. Mm-hmm. Yet in the mid-90s, in the middle part of this decade, it was quietly put out that it actually shrank a little bit during that period. And the same thing is happening now, I feel. And is this due to the fact that either somebody's doing it on purpose or by incompetence?
Are you talking about jiggering the numbers?
Yeah. I mean, why is it that they have to keep revising the numbers over and over again to get it right?
Well, I think Rich asks an interesting question. My take is a little bit different than his. I think, Rich, if you were to look over the last 10 years, the major untold story in the media, untold story, was the collapse of the middle class. Now, when I was in the House, I sat on the Financial Services Committee. Now I'm on the Budget Committee in the Senate. And on these committees, you have representatives of the administration, Bush administration in recent years, coming forward. And Alan Greenspan did it when I was in the House, and Secretary Paulson, Treasurer, head of the Treasury Department, when I'm in the Senate, Bernanke, and these guys come forward. And time after time, what we heard during this period is the economy is doing well. It is, quote-unquote, robust. We're seeing growth in the GMP.
It was now, true for Donald Trump.
But here's the point. The point is, how do you determine whether the economy is doing well? Well, the truth of the matter is you can have all kinds of statistics out there, but the reality is, what is happening to the ordinary person? And when you look at what's happening to the ordinary person, what you have seen is a decline in median family income. You have seen 8 million people lose their health insurance. You have seen 5 million more people slip into poverty. You've seen 3 million workers lose their pension. We have a situation where the American people are now working longer hours than are any other people in the industrialized world. We see a situation where real inflation accounted for wages have gone down for millions and millions of people. And unless we make some real changes in our economic policies, our kids, for the first time in the modern history of this country, are going to have a lower standard of living than our generation does. That is the reality. You know, Tom, when I do town meetings in Vermont, and I do a whole lot of them, what I always do, I ask people, tell me, how is the middle class doing? How do you think the middle class is doing? And there'll always be a couple of people raising their hand. They think we're doing pretty well. But 95, 98% of the people say things are tough and things are getting worse. So I think one of the big lies that's been perpetrated over the last 10 years is to disguise that reality. Now, the only group of people who have done well, and they have done extraordinarily well, are Bush's good friends. The oil companies have done record-breaking profits, Exxon Mobil. CEOs are enjoying huge compensation packages. Richest 1% now earn more income than the bottom 50%. So I think you can cook your figures any way you want it. But if you look at what's happening to the average person in the middle class, we're seeing a significant decline in our standard of living. And this is an issue that we've got to turn around.
Yeah. Amen. Greg in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to KPHX. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. And thank you both for all the work that you do.
Thank you, Greg.
I just have a quick comment and a very simple question. My comment is I'm very optimistic that Obama can provide good leadership that we need. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people forget that that's not the only solution. Once we get him in, then there's a lot of work to be done.
Absolutely, Greg. Greg, say that over a dozen times. That is absolutely right.
Well, here's my question, though, Bernie, is that, and I'm not sure if anybody's mentioned this or brought it up, but my question is, because the election is so important, I'm very skeptical that I know we're going to see a lot of the same things of, keeping voters out of the polls and, the black box voting, all these things. So what I'm wondering is, would it be feasible to pass legislation between now and November that would actually make the election day a national holiday so that people would not have to go to work? We could have plenty of people on our side in the polls. People wouldn't have to say, I didn't make it to the polls because I had to go to work.
Greg, we got 30 seconds before the break.
Greg, let me
ask Bernie take a shot at that.
Greg makes a very good point. When I was in the House, co-sponsored legislation to do just that. It is not going to happen now, Greg. It's too short a time before the election. But the idea of having Election Day as a national holiday so that we have as large a voter turnout as possible, so that we have the opportunity for people to sit around and talk about politics and the election, I think is exactly the right thing to do. So I support that, but it is not going to happen this election.
Yeah, and as you said, it's not enough just to vote.
No, not by a long shot.
We have to get active. 27 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Sanders.Senate.gov is Bernie's website if you'd like to get on his newsletter and see what's up over at his office. 866-303-2270, our telephone number.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Let's be the good guys again.
34 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. And Bernie, just real quickly, before we get back to our callers, and I want to make it real quick because we've got a whole board full of them. But I don't know if you saw this headline this morning. I think this just came down the line that U.S. foreclosure rates double as house prices decline. Right now, one out of every 171 households in America has been foreclosed on. Over 740,000 properties nationwide are in some stage of foreclosure. And the president of the largest bond fund in America, this is Bill Gross, manager of Pacific Investment Management Company, said about 25 million U.S. homeowners risk owing more than the value of their homes.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, this is...
I mean, it's just another indication of what's happening to the middle class. So many people had most of their wealth in their homes, and they're seeing that just dissipating every day.
Yeah, yeah, it's really tragic. 1-866-303-2270, our number, John in Los Angeles on K-Talk. Hey, John.
Good morning. Earlier in the week, Tom had a caller that mentioned the Republicans had a behind-closed-door meeting concerning trying to find an excuse for the president to call martial law and use the current economic crisis as a reason for that. Is there any truth to that rumor?
I doubt it. I mean, you know, I don't go to the Republican meetings behind those, but that sounds very, very unlikely. You know, I think one of the things, and we hear this on the show every now and then, there's a lot of paranoia out there. And I remember, Tom, before the last election, you know, we had people calling us up and saying, why should I vote? Karl Rove is going to press a button, and my vote's going to go off into outer space. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what people should know, on virtually every close Senate election, Democrats won. So I think... we want to be very concerned about making sure that every vote that is cast is counted accurately. We got to be very vigorous, and I think the Obama campaign is going to be much more aggressive than any campaign among Democratic candidates in recent history. But let's not get paranoid. There's going to be an election. It's going to be November 4th, and if we want Obama to win, we're going to have to work very, very hard and so forth.
Yeah. Roy in Long Island, New York. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, hey, good morning. We need help with the Uniting Families Act. Immigration Equality and the HRC just refused to bring it to the floor for a vote. There are enough sponsors in the Congress. Is there
any... Roy, you have to help me on this one. There are hundreds and hundreds of pieces of legislation being sponsored. What is the United Families Act?
Well, if you're in a binational relationship, it's a gay relationship where your partner is non-U.S., you can't bring them into the United States as the straight people can, as the other half, their domestic partner, whatever you want to call it.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's something that I certainly am sympathetic to.
Roy, your phone is breaking up. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
See, you'll take a look at that, Bernie. You're in favor of that legislation.
Roy's point was a good point.
Yeah, okay. Jake in Davie, Florida, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, thank you very much. I've got a question for the senator. Three sitting senators all attended the same high school in Brooklyn. You, Norm Coleman, and Chuck Schumer. To what do you account for that? This was an arch rival.
Yep, I'm sorry. I thought he was finished. I just dropped the call.
That school has produced not only senators, it's produced a number of important scientists, academics, and so forth. I think at that particular moment, and I suspect now, it was a community, back then when I was growing up, of a lot of immigrant kids whose parents put a lot of emphasis on education. And you had a lot of great teachers there who demanded a lot of their students, I think the results were not only in the number of senators that graduated, but in the number of other people who have excelled in a whole bunch of areas. And it just reminds me again of how good public education can be. You don't have to go to Exeter and you don't have to go to Yale University. You can get, at least back then, you can get a very strong and good education. We've got to make sure that public education continues to improve and to excel, and that all of our kids get the kind of education they need in the 21st century.
Amen. Lonnie in Dallas, Texas, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, I was just, you know, wondering, you know, everybody was saying how the economy is just going down, and I can feel the effects of it being in the middle class myself. With this president's change in president, do you really think it's going to have a major effect on things getting back to normal, as we could call?
Yeah. Well, Lonnie, I mean, you have some tough economic issues. Some of them actually predated Bush. And Obama is not going to bring about miracles. But what we can simply say is that under Clinton, the middle class and lower income people did pretty well. Didn't do fantastically well. They did pretty well. And the rich did, by the way, very well. And under Bush, you have seen a significant reversal with an increase in poverty, loss of health insurance, loss of pensions, very high inflation rates for basic needs. I think that you will see Obama paying attention to issues like education. I'm on the education committee with him. I think he knows the importance of public education. I think he will do a heck of a lot more than Bush to make sure that all of our people have the opportunity to go to college. I think he will make progress there. Unlike John McCain and George Bush, Barack Obama believes that every American is entitled to health care. I would approach the problem differently than he does. But he does believe that all Americans are entitled to health care, and that is a very significant issue. Unlike Bush and McCain, he is not going to give more and more tax breaks to billionaires and drive up the national debt. His concern is to help the struggling middle class and maybe provide some tax relief there. Unlike McCain, he is not flip-flopping on whether or not Social Security should be privatized or talking about raising the retirement age. He has, in fact, a very sensible proposal that would lift the cap and say to the richest people in this country, you're going to have to contribute more into Social Security than you currently do with a cap. There is now a cap, and I think he will be strong in making sure that Social Security is there for our kids and our grandchildren. Unlike McCain, he does not believe in unfettered free trade, which is a green light to allow corporate America to continue to throw our workers out on the street and move to China or Vietnam. He wants at least a fair trade policy. So I'm not here to tell you that the day after Obama gets elected, everything turns perfect. It doesn't. It'll be a lot of hard work. Bottom line is that no matter who is elected, what I can tell you is you have very, very powerful people in the oil industry, in the coal industry, in financial services and banks and credit cards, insurance companies, drug companies. These people are rampant. They are spending hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars every single year on campaign contributions, on lobbying. They're going to be there the day after Obama gets elected. And that is why the call-up a few minutes ago, Tom, who said, we have got to continue our efforts, not just up until Election Day, but after Election Day. We need, if we've ever needed in this country, a strong, progressive, grassroots movement which says as clear as possible that government has finally got to start working for middle class and working families and not just the rich and the powerful who have had so much influence in the last 7.5 years.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Herb, in Western Massachusetts, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, hi, how are you, Senator? A couple points. Number one, why do the Democrats keep voting against oil oil exploration? We have a guy out here named John Oliver who's running for re-election. He's voted against it. We know we need it. The American people are suffering. I guess that's my first point. My second point is why have we figured out after his speech yesterday in Germany and so on that Barack Obama is a racist, and why haven't we addressed that? I do agree with the fact that
Barack Obama is a racist?
He's a racist.
I
yes.
see. Well, where did you get this earth-shattering information?
I've heard it.
No doubt.
Comment they've made. The guy's a racist.
We were talking a few minutes ago. Tom was mentioning about scurrilous emails going out. Now, tell me why Obama's. How do you really know that? You've talked to him about it at length?
No, but you can hear it in everything he says.
Really? Tell me what he says that is racist.
He threw his mother and grandmother under a bus. Has he ever mentioned
really?
That?
Really? I'm not aware that he threw his mother and grandmother under a bus. Not at all. Okay, well, let me respond to this. Okay, and I'm glad Herb asked the first question, and that is clearly the American people are outraged at gas being $4.10 a gallon. I could tell you that in the northern tier of this country, including the state of Vermont, people are very worried about what the cost of home heating oil is going to be next winter. And the President of the United States, John McCain, and the Republicans have, thank God, solved the problem, Tom. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that we've got to drill in the outer continental shelf. And clearly, the day after we do that, my God, gas prices are going to go down. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, it's just going to take us 5 years to get there, and it might add a week's worth of oil.
I want to talk back because Herb asked the right question. This is just another fraudulent effort on the part of the Republicans to fool the American people.
Right.
According to the Bush administration, you are not going to see any significant impact until 2030, and at that point, it will have no significant impact in the price of gas. So we'll talk about that later.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Just a heads up, Governor Don Siegelman will be with us at the top of the hour. And we have tentatively booked Congressman Kucinich, although he's holding his hearings right now. So it's all going to depend on his congressional schedule about the House hearings on impeachment before Conyers House Judiciary Committee. So we'll get to that as we continue. Right now, Senator Bernie Sanders with us.
Let me continue on Herb's call, because I think that is going to be a part of the Republican mantra that we're going to be hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Personal attacks on Barack Obama. In this case, Barack Obama is a racist, and Herb just knows that. He just really knows that. And it might have to do with some of these emails you were talking about a moment ago that are going all over the country. And the second point is, why aren't the Democrats just doing what President Bush and the oil companies want and allowing them more drilling tomorrow on the coastal area, the outer shelf? And let me read on that from the Bush administration's own annual Energy Outlook report in 2007. And this is what they say. Access to the Pacific, Atlantic, and Eastern Gulf regions would not have a significant impact on domestic crude oil and natural gas production or prices before 2030. Meanwhile, those of us who are trying to do something now, today, not in 2030, to lower gas and oil prices, we get stymied every day by this administration and by the Republicans in the Senate. Today, just a few hours ago, we tried to get a bill passed that would begin dealing with speculation. And there are some people who think that the price of a barrel of oil is now 25 to 50% higher than it should be based on supply and demand and the decline of the dollar. Because of excessive market manipulation and speculation. Well, Republicans did not allow us to get a vote on that issue, and we just lost that. Meanwhile, also, we have an industry, the oil industry, which is enjoying record-breaking profits. ExxonMobil last year earned more profits than any corporation in the history of the world. In recent years, they paid their CEO something like $400 million in compensation. But this is not an issue that the Republicans choose to talk about too much.
Yeah. And you know, McCain seems to be boiling everything down to three simple talking points, and we can get into that in the future. But 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, and Nancy in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you. Senator Sanders and Tom, a privilege. My question is this. We want grassroots action. I understand that they're going to be closing up the progressive radio station in the Rochester area. And it's likely that they will try to close up the rest of us. The only place I get direct news is from this station. What can we do to make sure we keep progressive radio going?
Well, Nancy, that is a very, very, very good question. It's something that, and by the way, in talking to Tom Hartman, I think you're talking to one of the champions of that effort. And there are other great progressive talk show hosts out there.
Mm-hmm.
Al Franken deserves a lot of credit for the work that he did for many years. He's now running for the U.S. Senate from Minnesota, stands a good chance to win that. I It's a long story, Nancy, but among other things, I think we have to have progressive businesses and people who are consumers demand that there be more progressive spokespeople on radio and television. I think if Rupert Murdoch has taught us anything, is that if you want to get your voice out, you got to own some networks out there. And I think this is a long-term goal that we have got to strive for. But what I want to say, Nancy, is in this particular area, we have made some real progress in recent years. And Tom, I think you will concur with me that the position of progressives in talk radio today is a heck of a lot better than it was, say, 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, this show is growing. I mean, we just picked up a 50,000-watt station in Dallas, Texas. We're on the air there now. We're live in Miami. We're on the air in Atlanta. I mean, it's growing. It's growing slowly, but it's growing. I mean, the entire area of progressive talk radio, and I think that it has a long, long way to go. I think there's a lot of potential.
And I think one of the things that people, to answer Nancy's question, have, you know, when we talk about being politically active, it's not just voting. It means going to your local stations and saying, you know, I just don't want to hear Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity all day long. We'd like some progressive voices. And what is astounding is you have communities and cities in America which vote overwhelmingly against Republicans, and yet the people are, you know, are given right-wing radio. So I think you need grassroots activism to start calling up these radio stations and saying, you know, put some progressive voices on the air.
Yeah, and support your sponsors of the stations
right.
that you're listening on. Tony in Minneapolis, Minnesota, speaking of stations that we're listening to, that we're on the air with. Hey, Tony, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Hello, and hope you're having a good Friday morning.
Thank you. We have just 1 minute here before
okay.
we have to wrap up the hour, Tony.
Now, right now, there are investigations going on with this administration. Makarov and other people have been subpoenaed and they don't show up. When a new administration is sworn in, does Congress or the Senate have the right to continue these investigations? Or will it be up to, like, an Obama presidency to say, continue the investigations?
Congress has the right to look at anything it wants to look at.
Yeah. So do you expect that those will continue, that there will be something like, you know, the Iran-Contra hearings kind of things?
That could well be. I don't want to speculate, but Congress has the right to do anything it wants.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Chuck in San Antonio. Got a real quick one, Chuck?
I love your show, Tom. One thing the Democrats always fail to do is name things. This windfall profits tax. It's not a windfall. It's a profiteering. It's just a profiteering.
Yeah, the profiteering tax, the piracy tax. What do you think, Bernie?
That's true not only in oil, it's true in Iraq, and it's true all over the place.
But there you go. Yeah, yesterday we played the clip of Roosevelt saying, we will have no war millionaires from the current emergency. Boy, how times have changed. Thanks. Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov. Thank you, Bernie.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
Good talking with you. 57 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to our program. Governor Don Siegelman on the line with us. DonSiegelman.org, DonSiegelman.com, I-B-4-E. His website also ContemptForRogue.com. Governor, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you, Tom.
Great to have you back with us. In the week or so since we last talked, I think this is maybe the fifth time you've been on our program, or sixth. Karl Rove has submitted a written response, apparently, to one of the congressional committees asking questions about him. I'm curious about your take on this.
Well, it's typical Karl Rove. He refused to answer the central allegation against him, and that was whether or not he had conversations with my prosecutor's husband about getting the Department of Justice to take care of me.
That would be Bill Canary.
He said he didn't talk to officials in Alabama around the 2005 timeframe, but he didn't talk about the 2002 time frame, which was the subject of the affidavit of Dana Jill Simpson, the Republican lawyer who places Karl Rove at the scene of the crime. So he absolutely gave non-answers. Of course, they were not under oath. Karl Rove still has thumbed his nose and spit in the face of Congress. And let me say this about Congress. It's one thing to take the high road, but let's not ignore the Constitution while we're doing it. You know, Karl Rove needs to answer to a subpoena just like any other ordinary American citizen would have to answer. And to give him any special breaks is wrong. It sets a bad precedent, and that's why I'm encouraging all of your listeners to please go to www.contemptforrove.com or sendrovetojail.com, and let's get Congress's attention and give them a little support, and let's hold Karl Rove in contempt.
Wouldn't it be a good idea, Governor Don Siegelman, to begin, you know, to do this like a criminal prosecution, like, you know, a mob prosecution, because we're dealing here with basically an organized crime syndicate, in my opinion. And for example, bring Bill Canary before Congress and have him. I mean, he can't claim executive privilege.
Yeah, Tom, let me follow up on that, because people are going to say, who is Bill Canary? Bill Canary was Andrew Card's assistant. He was a special assistant to the president. He and Rove ran the 1992 Bush-Quayle campaign. They both of them came to Alabama together after the 1992 campaign. They both married women from Alabama. Karl Rove has his home on the Gulf Coast. Karl Rove has run a number of campaigns out of Alabama. So his best friend is Bill Canary. His wife is my prosecutor. Let me say one other thing. Bill Canary was my opponent's campaign manager while his wife, the U.S. attorney, started the investigation. Let me repeat. My opponent's campaign manager is the husband of the prosecutor, and he is Karl Rove's best friend in Alabama.
The federal prosecutor who prosecuted you and sent you to prison.
Yes.
And on trumped-up charges.
She started this investigation during the campaign and brought me to trial 1 month before the Democratic primary. It was all obvious to everybody except the Alabama media, but even the Alabama media is now beginning to come around. But yes, to answer your question, Karl Rove, he doesn't have executive privilege either, unless he actually did talk to the president about my prosecution. But let's assume that for argument's sake that he can claim that. Bill Canary can't claim it, and the other people who were involved in this local conspiracy can't claim it. And let me say this, too. Karl Rove could not have done this by himself. Who was the logical contact between Karl Rove and the prosecutors? It was Bill Canary.
Right, since the prosecutor was Bill Canary's wife, Lura.
Exactly. And the other prosecutor was Alice Martin, who's a close friend of both Bill Canary's and Karl Rove's. She worked under Hickman Ewing, who was Kenneth Starr's right-hand man. She worked for Hickman Ewing for 5 years, a man that Bill Clinton said hated him as much as Kenneth Starr, but just couldn't hide it as well. These people are highly politicized. And, of course, we now know that virtually everybody at the Department of Justice was politicized. They had to pass a political test before they got hired. And if they didn't do their job right, like David Iglesias, they were fired. And I say didn't do their job right, that meant they didn't go after Democrats.
They didn't prosecute Democrats, exactly.
Exactly.
Or ignore the prosecutions of Republicans.
Or ignore the prosecution of Republicans. And in my case, the government's key witness, according to Time magazine, identified two high-level Republicans, one an attorney general and one a United States senator, who were engaged in crimes, according to their witness. The investigators told the witness, we don't believe you when it comes to these Republicans, but somehow or another they believed him when it came to the Democrat, Don Siegelman.
Right. Yeah. This, Governor Siegelman, we're talking with Governor Don Siegelman. Websites, donsiegelman.com or .org, contemptforrove.com, sendrovetojail.com. To what extent do you think that a new Congress and a new presidency, particularly if it's a Democratic president, Barack Obama, may stimulate or slow down this kind of an investigation and prosecution?
Well, let me say this. The Democrats have a majority now. Mm. They ought to use it. It's okay, yeah. As I said at the outset of this, it's okay to take the high road, but it's not okay to ignore the United States Constitution. And, you know, those people who have been engaged in high crimes and against this country, who have subverted our democracy, who have misused their powers and used the Department of Justice as a political weapon to go after their opponents because they don't like them, those people need to be brought to justice. And Congress is the only place we can turn. The American people have no other place to go. And so we are, you know, I'm asking your listeners to please, you know, email, call, write Congress, but get, you know, you can go to www.contemptforrove.com or sendrovetojail.com and automatically send a message to your congressman.
Right. Although let me point out, from having talked with a number of congressmen over the years, emails to Congress are nowhere near as effective as a phone call. And if you go to callcongress.org, we have a list of the 800 numbers you can use to call Capitol Hill. If you're
right.
not sure who your member of the House of Representatives is, give them your zip code. They'll tell you who it is and connect you with that person's office, or simply ask for your congressman or woman and tell them. You know, this prosecution of Governor Don Siegelman down in Alabama by Bill Canary's wife, Lura, and Karl Rove needs to be investigated. Please get on it.
Yeah, the other thing, please, Tom, this is, I keep saying this, but this is no longer about me. It is about restoring justice. It is about preserving our democracy. Our democracy cannot survive if the powers of government are used to bring down people's political opponents.
Yep.
We have got to hold those people accountable, and otherwise, it becomes part of an accepted political culture that will happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just wrong that these people are so far have been allowed to get away with
it. Yeah, because really what we're seeing right now is the same thing that happened during the Nixon administration. And ultimately, he got pardoned and all the investigations got stopped.
Tom, you're right. It's the same kind of pattern. And it was also used with Scooter Libby, and it was also used with Jack Abramoff. When they got a plea and they cut off the investigation so it wouldn't go any deeper, it is wrong for Congress to allow this to go on. They've got to dig for the truth. The American people deserve to know the truth.
Right. Right. And the politicization of the Justice Department, this is just right across the board. It is also absolutely wrong. And, you know, there's no time like the present.
Hey, Tom, I want to thank you, too. I remember one show that I was on. I had just gotten notice from the probation office that I was to be treated as a, quote, special offender. And as such, they wanted me – my probation officer was directed to treat
me as if
I was a member of the mafia or a potential terrorist or a pedophile. And I had to get written notice 30 days in advance. They have now reversed themselves on that, and I think in no small part to the what happened on that show. And I want to thank you for helping me get some of my restrictions lifted.
That's great. I'm glad to hear. That's very, very good news. Governor Siegelman, we have to wrap it up here, but I thank you so much for coming on the show. We will have you on frequently. I will continue this process. I want this to be a high-profile thing. I think what you're doing and not giving up on this is absolutely great, and we totally support you. Thank you for coming on the program.
Tom, thank you so much, and I hope each of your listeners have a great weekend.
Thank you. And don't forget to call your member of Congress and the websites you can check out, Contempt4Rove, sendrovetojail.com, contemptforrove.com, and, of course, donsiegelman.com, I before E. 17 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
Anything goes Friday, 866-303-2270. Right now, before the House of Representatives, John Conyers Committee is listening to testimony regarding Dennis Kucinich's article of impeachment, and Frederick Schwartz of the Brennan Center for Justice is speaking. This is live.
What has been done, both what has gone wrong and what has gone right, we can actually bring our country together, and that we can show that when properly respected, our constitutional structure and our core fundamental values can, as they have for so many years, provide the people of this country and of the world the hope for a better, fuller, fairer life.
There you go. That was the end of Mr. Schwartz's testimony. We'll have some more clips of this stuff a little later on when we have a chance to chop up some of this audio. But all of the closing comments are being given right now. And one of the things that Mr. Schwartz said, actually, during the break, I was listening during the break, he said that he thinks that now is not the time for impeachment. It's too late. Said it should have been done 6 months ago or a year ago. Now is not the time for impeachment. It would just totally scramble the elections that are coming up. It would become highly politicized. It would be viewed as being purely political. But nonetheless, he said, we have to have the hearings. We have to lay out the crimes. We have to show the flaws of what went on. We have to bring it all to absolute visibility. So very, very, very interesting testimony. Here's another speaker.
If you can keep it. Honorable Representatives,
that's Elliot Adams.
Sums up the essence of what we are here today for. If we can keep it. In the armed forces, we took an oath, the same oath congressmen take, to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Now, as veterans, we still take that oath seriously. Some of us are gray-haired and long in the tooth, but are here on the Hill still defending that Constitution. Briefly, Veterans for Peace has members from every war that this country has fought.
That was Elliot Adams. He's with Veterans for Peace. He's the national president, and he's speaking right now before the congressional hearings. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Pete in Simi Valley, California. Hey, is it Simi Valley?
It is Simi Valley, California.
Simi,
you know, the belly of the beast where Ronnie Reagan's library is.
Okay.
So this bastion of right-wing thinking here. Hey, Tom, real quick, I just wanted to get this out there. I can't tell you how many times I've had to explain to my right-wing friends when they're watching Fox News or anywhere, when they say, some people would say, that's not a fact. That's just them saying what they think and using it as fact.
Well, this is Katie Couric did this in her interview with Obama the other day. She said, some people's eyebrows are raised about the fact that the surge is working and you're not supporting it.
Your eyebrows are raised, woman.
Yeah,
baby.
Yeah.
Come on.
Exactly. Thank you, Pete. Excellent point. And in fact, Robert Greenwald, who is just, you know, one of my heroes, Robert Greenwald and Brave New Films, did a marvelous piece on an entire movie, actually, on Fox. And that was one of the points that they pointed out over and over and over again throughout that, is how they use that some people say stuff. And it's just so wrong. Raymond in Carrollton, Texas. Hey, Raymond, what's on your mind today?
Yes. I just wondered, do you think they're actually going to bring charges up against the Bush people, himself and his cabinet, after he gets out of office? Because I know they're not going to do it against a sitting president, as you just said. They're not going to impeach him. They think it's pretty political. Until the one thing about that guy who called Obama a racist, this guy is crazy, and that's all I'm going to say to that.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Raymond. Not only is he crazy, he's getting these emails. Like I'm telling you, this email that's going around right now among Republicans is from a guy who says he's a white guy in the military and Obama snubbed him. And you know, it's thinly veiled racism. It's not even thinly veiled, frankly. And that's probably what that guy was referring to. Anyhow, will this administration be brought up on war crimes charges? I don't think so in the United States. I don't think that there's a politician in the United States who has the political power in, you know, along with the will necessary in Congress to, there's a couple people who will call for it. But I think that there's a very good chance that internationally he'll be brought up on war crime charges and perhaps even prosecuted or an attempt at prosecution in The Hague. And I'm guessing that that will probably come through one of the European governments, and it'll probably be initiated by Ellen Ratner's brother, Michael Ratner, who's the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, and is the guy who successfully sued the Bush administration, all three of the Supreme Court cases where they ruled that you can't just throw people in prison forever. And, so, I think it's going to happen. But we've got to keep their feet to the fire. Raymond, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. We've got to push this stuff. I mean, we've really got to push these topics. This is a big one. You don't let people get away with war crimes. We have 4.5 million refugees. Can you imagine if you and your family had to flee, members of your family were killed, your livelihood was destroyed, your children were prostituting themselves in order to keep from starving to death? I mean, that's what's going on in Iraq.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Call in now at 866-303-2270.
Back 34 minutes past the hour, 178 days, 10 hours, 49 minutes, 53 seconds until George W. Bush voluntarily leaves office, barring impeachment. One of the callers earlier had asked Bernie about supporting progressive media, and I just want to note, you know, obviously, please support your progressive radio stations. And networks and whatnot and shows and all that kind of thing. But also there's progressive web media out there. There's two websites that are major sources of information for me and that I contribute to. Buzzflash.com is doing a fundraising drive right now and a great site. And CommonDreams.org. CommonDreams.org, where I've been publishing things since 2002, I believe, perhaps 2003. And virtually everything that I've written, I think with the exception of maybe just one or two pieces that might have first shown up someplace else, but virtually everything I've written started out there on commondreams.org. And they do a marvelous job. They've got a fundraiser going on right now. And in the midst of this, a week ago today, Lina Neuhauser, the co-founder of Common Dreams, along with her husband Craig Brown, died. Of her after a 3-year struggle with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And you can read the eulogy, you know, the story, really, of Lina over at commondreams.org. And I encourage you to do that and tellthebees.org and pitch in a little bit to help out commondreams.org and buzzflash.com and whatever your favorite sites may be. I mean, all of them right across the board. Progressive media. You've got conservative media out there. I can tell you, if I had taken whatever talent I may have and said I'm going to do a conservative talk show, I'd be rich right now. I mean, if Craig Brown at Common Dreams or Mark Carlin over at Buzzflash had said, okay, we're going to do conservative sites, right now they'd have big conservative foundations pumping hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars at them. It ain't happening. We need to be the ones who are supporting people. It's grassroots activity. It's grassroots support for these kinds of websites. And not just them. I mean, they're right across the board. There's so many out there that are doing such good work. So, anyhow, enough said. And Lena, we will miss you. I'm sure this must be a very difficult time for Craig. So, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Diane in Charlottesville, Virginia, listening on WVAX. Hey, Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'd like to just make a few comments about this Karl Rove situation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Congress has pretty much neutered itself as far as I'm concerned. They don't seem to want to follow the Constitution either, and I don't know if it's because of lack of courage or what, and it's not. But the issue of Karl Rove and him basically stubbing his nose at their subpoena power, you know, law works on precedent, and if the precedent becomes that you don't have to respond to a congressional subpoena, then anybody else in the future who goes before Congress or is asked to go before Congress with a subpoena, that person's attorney can just say, I'm sorry, but the precedent is you don't really have to.
Yeah, yeah. And this didn't start with Karl Rove, by the way. He's, I think, the third or fourth member of this administration who has essentially ignored congressional subpoenas.
Oh, yeah,
It's, you know, it may end up before the Supreme Court, some of these cases, which could be a disaster given, you know, the five seat majority of right-wing cranks on the Supreme Court, well, at least a four-vote block. It depends on how Kennedy swings.
Better hope everybody's cholesterol stays low.
Yeah. Well, and it highlights once again the importance of getting a Democrat in the White House. Diane, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for pointing that out. You're so absolutely right. So absolutely right. Susan in Ann Arbor, Michigan, listening on WDTW. Hey, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And you?
Good. I'm good. I want to comment on impeachment and war crimes.
Yeah.
Okay, basically, I want to say that, first off, impeachment, I don't care whether it happens now or if they just hold hearings. I wanted him impeached a year ago, yeah. And it was totally wrong that she took impeachment off the table.
I agree. I wanted him impeached 3 years ago. 5 years ago. I wanted him impeached the day that he invaded Iraq. You know.
That's for sure. The other thing I want to say is that this Bush administration they have overreached their presidency, the government laws that were given to them from day one, starting with the time that after 9/11 when they started torture, when they started using the power of our government against individuals like Jocelyn Radak and like, you know, people who became whistleblowers.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that for that reason alone, they should have been impeached. There are so many reasons to impeach, and I hope that they get them in war crimes.
Yeah. Amen. Thank you very, you know, from your lips to God's ears. Thank you, Susan. I appreciate the call. Pete in Northfield, New Jersey. Hey, Pete.
Hi, Tom. I'm right out of Atlantic City for WTAA, Air America. I just wanted to make a comment. I'm an Obama fan. I have a lot of respect for John McCain, but I've had enough of George Bush. I think we all have. I think he stole the election. But anyway, with that in mind, my question is, in the national media today, is a big thing about the Secret Service and wanting about $9.2 million more for this campaign. And when I see somebody like Obama going overseas like that, and, you know, to me, he's like a rock star right now, especially this thing with Germany, where all these people are like, it's just no matter where this guy goes, he can do no wrong. And I you know, I'm a Democrat, but and I'd like to see more of his views. But I think that he should be more over here in America and coming to the people more to try to get elected and talk about the real issues. Because
you're really a Democrat, Pete.
No, trust me, I am. I really am. Sir,
yeah,
I know,
trust
I know.
Me, trust me.
Like,
you know, whenever somebody says trust me, I go, oh, you mean you, it's like, you know, no, I'm telling you the truth.
I'm like a blue dog. I'm a conservative.
Yeah. Come on, Pete, give me a break.
Really,
it was John. It was John McCain's website that had a countdown clock. How many days it had been since Obama went overseas? Since he was in Iraq. It was John McCain who was saying Obama needs to go to Iraq. It was John McCain who was saying Obama needs to go talk to our European allies. I've done that. He should do that. It was John McCain who went overseas repeatedly and had the press following him around along with all those Black Hawk helicopters and everything, walking through the markets in Baghdad. It's come on. Give me a break. Give me a break. You know, it's always nice to hear from a member of the staff of the Hannity Show, but enough already. Tim in South Bend, Indiana. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Just great.
Good. Hey, I just want to say I agree with you probably 99.9% of the time.
But
I do think there is more to consider in regards to the spotted owl issue.
Oh, that we were talking about yesterday with regard, yeah, okay, go
yeah,
ahead.
So, see, I used to be a videographer editor for an agricultural television program, and I'd rather not say which one, but 1 year we covered the Tree Farmer of the Year,
mm-hmm.
and that year, off, or that farmer, I should say, off the record, he told us that even though he would like to save the spotted owl, with the way the law was written, if he saw a spotted owl in a tree,
he had to shoot
kill it.
It
and bury it.
Yeah.
Because obviously he's not able to, you know, harvest any trees or even thin out the area, and he's not able to make any money off the land in order to even pay the taxes to keep the land.
Yeah, so in other words, what he said was the, and again, the importance of the spotted owl is that it's not just one species going extinct. The spotted owl is an indicator species. It is a species that when it goes, it means that an entire ecosystem is collapsing. And so this guy was basically reflecting the worldview that the planet is here for us humans, and we can do no wrong, and we're completely disconnected from all of nature, and it doesn't matter what happens to nature. And I'm telling you, that worldview is going to destroy us as a species just as rapidly as it's destroying the spotted owl. Maybe not just as rapidly, but eventually it'll get us. It has gotten every civilization that has had that worldview. Ultimately, it has caught up with them and destroyed them.
Well, I do understand that, but even in his area, the spotted owl would migrate through the area. It wasn't that it was actually indigenous to that particular area, but it would be migrating through it. And if it's just seen, spotted in a tree by someone other than himself, you know, then he runs the risk of, oh my gosh, now I can't harvest any trees in my land. I can't thin out the area, which of course, you know, is good in case of forest fires and the like. They should at least be able to do that. And I guess my point is I think they need to be able to, you know, rewrite the law so that it benefits everybody, the spotted owl as well as for those farmers that own that land and
yeah.
need to be able to make something off the land in order to keep the land.
I would submit to you, Tim, that balance has been achieved, that there are people on the environmentalist side who would say this law doesn't go anywhere near far enough, and you got people on the tree farming side who are saying this law is way over the top, and, you know, if everybody's unhappy with it, as the old saying in politics goes, it's probably the right thing. No, I'm serious. I mean, we really have to take this stuff seriously. When you've got indicator species, when you've got, you know, we're experiencing an extinction right now that is roughly happening as fast as the dinosaurs vanish. Richard Leakey wrote a book about this called The Sixth Extinction. I mean, we're the top predator. We're at the top of the food chain right now. And the top predator is the one that goes when there's a massive extinction. And there's this massive extinction happening. And we could be the ones that end up extinct. And we've got to seriously look at what's going on around us in the planet. We are not separate from nature. We are part of it all. It's all an interconnected web of life. And I don't mean that in some airy-fairy way. It's hard science.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Democracy Zone, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 9.5 minutes before the hour. Former Congressman Bob Barr of Georgia, now the Libertarian Party's nominee for President of the United States, testifying this morning before John Conyers Commission. The inquiry on the impeachment, the article of impeachment submitted by Dennis Kucinich, Congressman Barr. Wrong button.
And then back in the 1990s, I recall the national debt clock that would count up. The amount over time of the national debt.
Mr. Chairman, what we're facing now is a constitutional clock, and it is counting down what remains of the Constitution of this great land. If I might ask to be introduced into the record, the disappearing Bill of Rights. This is the Bill of Rights that we as members of the Judiciary Committee know it as adopted in 1791. This is what it is fast becoming. I quote, "The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects shall be delegated to the United States." If I might introduce that into the record.
Without objection, so ordered into the record.
And, we have heard, and even though this is not...
And John Conyers smiles broadly, because Bob Barr is holding up a Bill of Rights that's been all redacted. It's been all blacked out. And that's exactly what's going on. I mean, it's remarkable. James in Mesquite, Texas. Hey, James, what's on your mind today?
One thing about how the switch in the polls, of you know how they're talking about between the numbers between Obama and McCain, you know,
mm-hmm.
you never can believe anything the news stations are telling you these days, because it's like, you know, you listen to this on one station and you hear that on the other one, so it's like you don't know which way you're going. And another thing about, you know, how everybody was talking about impeaching Bush, well, I think they should bring him up on war crimes, but I tell people all the time, when you let the court jester become king, that's what happened.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And all the problem is, James, it was a coup d'etat. We didn't let it happen. The Supreme Court put him in the first place, and now increasingly, and I recommend you go over to bradblog.com and check it out. There's or Mark Crispin Miller's sites. There's an enormous amount of evidence coming out of Ohio that the second election was stolen in that state. So, James, your point is well taken. John in Los Angeles. Hey, John.
Hi, Tom. The reason why I was calling is because you talked last week about voting machines and how they don't have a paper trail. And
right.
I think a good model for that actually is the multi-state lottery, because here they run lotteries every week in dozens of states, and you make your choices on paper, and you get a printout, and you can check it. And then the next day they know, you know, who won, what machine printed the winning ticket and everything. And so, you know, the technology is there, and I think it's probably even manufactured by a lot of people who make these voting machines.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to technology per se. Here's my problem. Number one, we don't even have, I mean, we know how to do secure technology, not just the lottery machines, but look at the laws in Las Vegas with regard to the gambling, you know, the machines in the casinos. And they inspect them, and they check them, and they check them 16 ways to Sunday, and they're solid. But none of those kind of controls are in place for these machines. You've got Diebold making the same machines that you use at the bank, which are incredibly secure, making voting machines which are not secure, number one. But number two, I don't think that the machines or the software should be owned by private corporations.
Yeah,
I don't want
that.
Private corporations handling my vote. I think they should get out of the business. This is, you know, the vote is the beating heart of democracy. It is the essential, the core of the commons of democracy, and it must be owned and run and controlled by officials who are responsible to us in a way that is totally transparent. John, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Stan in Gambles, Maryland. Hey, Stan, what's up?
Hi. Yesterday you talked about what to do about the problem of people having their homes taken away from them because of the right of eminent domain claimed by the state.
Yeah.
And I agree, that can be a substantial problem. I think I have a way to resolve it, however, and that would be simply treat these people like musicians and pay them a royalty for their property, which has been taken away. Let them to continue making their profit on this land.
The way eminent domain works is the government says, okay, we're going to take your house to build a road. Your house is worth $50,000. Here's a check. I mean, you know, and you have the right to contest that and say, no, it's actually worth $60,000, and it goes to court, and you know, a judge or a jury will decide. And people would pay. What the guy yesterday was talking about was he was saying that the reduction of the value, say you buy some property for $50,000, you buy a lot in a neighborhood, and you, on that lot, you think, you know, there's nobody running a toxic waste disposal center in this town. I could make a lot of money doing that. And, but your neighbors have gotten together and collectively through the democratic process, your town has zoned that as residential. And so then these guys come along and say, well, you know, I can't do a toxic waste plant here. Well, you know, if I did, this property wouldn't be worth $50,000. It'd be worth $500,000. So you, the government, should have to pay me $450,000. And it's a specious argument. It's a nonsensical argument. Now, there is a middle ground, actually, between the two, and that is, you know, somebody buys some land for a tree farm, for example, and it has the value of a tree farm, and then the spotted owl gets discovered on it, and it doesn't have that value. At that point, perhaps it's, you know, arguably there should be some sort of appropriate compensation for the loss of value. But, you know, how you determine that, that's a tough one. And you know, we just went through this here in Oregon with a ballot measure that basically said if somebody bought land and they wanted to subdivide it and turn it into a subdivision, but you know, the community didn't want there to be a subdivision, then the community had to buy the land from them or had to reimburse them for the added value that wasn't there but could have been there and all this kind of, and it just created an absolute disaster. It created all these lawsuits. All of a sudden, everybody who had a farm wanted to be a developer, and when they couldn't be a developer, they you know, and it took the legislature to fix this thing because of this right-wing ballot measure. I mean, it's a very, very, very messy process, unfortunately. But there's a difference between eminent domain under the Fifth Amendment and what's essentially zoning. And that difference, I think, most people don't understand. It's a difference that needs to be highlighted. 57 minutes past the hour. Anything goes Friday.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour and third hour of our program. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Your thoughts on the vice presidential nomination as well. Maybe we can kick this around today. Evan Bayh, Joe Biden, Wes Clark, Hillary Clinton, Chris Dodd, John Edwards, Chuck Hagel, he's a Republican, Tim Kaine, these are the names that the press has thrown around, Janet Napolitano, Sam Nunn, Jack Reed, Ed Rendell, Bill Richardson, Kathleen Sebelius, anybody else you think should be on that list, anybody you think in particular should not be on that list? I would say at the very least Chuck Hagel should not be on that list. Who knows? I don't know. It'd be very interesting. 303-2270. Brett in Illinois. Hey, Brett, what's up?
I didn't call for the VP thing, but
no, that's fine. It's any topic you want here today.
Okay. The reason why I called is because the truth about the surge is just way too convoluted. Eventually, we're going to have to, you know, admit for some stupid reason that it worked. But what I would like to do is for the Democrats to take it back. We were the ones quoting General Chinseki, saying that he was basically touting that we needed 300,000 or troops in there.
Right, in the very first place. Yeah.
Up until the Golden Mosque bombing, when it turned into a civil war, we were the ones saying we need more troops.
Yeah.
And if we could take it back, because
unfortunately, what's happened is Obama, you know, is on record. This is where Katie Couric went after him, and he needs a soundbite to respond to it. And I don't have one to offer him, frankly, because as you said, it is more complex than that. First of all, it wasn't a surge; it was an escalation, because it's the people are still there, right? I mean, a surge is something that happens for a few weeks or a few months at the most. Those guys are still there, number one. Number two, you had massive ethnic cleansing that preceded this.
Which is Joe Biden.
Right.
Joe Biden was correct on that one.
So. Yeah. And number three, you've got the Anbar Awakening. You've got all these Sunni tribesmen that we're now paying off, and they're not shooting at us anymore, and they're taking care of Al-Qaeda instead of us. And you combine all those things with basically, you know, 30,000 soldiers going into Baghdad and acting as cops in a few neighborhoods, and the fact that Muqtada al-Sadr has decided to stand down, and all of those things collectively have made the security situation in Iraq better.
Well, yeah. Democrats, we were basically too right too early. I mean, we were too correct too early.
Yeah, and the Obama campaign needs to figure out a way to say that in a sentence or two so that, you know, the Katie Couric persistent questioning can be responded to. Excellent one, Brett. Thank you very much for the call. I don't have the answer for that, and we need to come up with one. Carol in Mountain View, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Carol.
Hi. First, I have to preface this by saying that in the last 8 years, I have become a person of an inability to trust anything that comes from the government. But what I wanted to ask you is about Senate Bill 1959, which you probably know about, and I this is the
this is the Homegrown Terror Prevention Act.
Yes.
Yeah, we did a we did an entire show on this about 3 months ago or so. Yeah, we had a woman on from one of the animal rights groups, actually, because that's they're the targets of this. They were the theoretical targets of this. It was you know, against the Earth Firsters and the folks who were letting animals out of cages and things like that. And yeah, I think this is a very toxic piece of legislation.
Well, it is not directed toward animals.
No, it's ultimately or against animal rights activists.
Yeah.
It could be directed toward anybody.
And there are some statements in it about the internet has aided in facilitating violent radicalization.
Yep.
And I just am interested to know, why do you think the Democrats sponsored this in the House? And the vote was 404-6.
Right. Because I think that, first of all, I don't think most people carefully read it, number one. Number two, it doesn't call for anything other than a committee to investigate.
Yeah.
And so, you know, basically it's calling for a commission. And I think most people, when they look at legislation that's calling for a commission, just figure, yeah, what the heck?
Yeah.
And so they didn't take it seriously. But you're right. It does make assertions as if they were facts that I think may not be facts, or if they are facts, they are wildly overblown and hysteria-driven facts. And, you know, I have a lot of concerns about that piece of legislation.
One of the statements in it says, any measure taken to prevent violent radicalization and homegrown terrorism. So there is something.
Right, but it should be investigated. It doesn't, you know, again, this piece of legislation, this Homegrown Terror Prevention Act, doesn't actually make any laws or it doesn't give anybody the ability to throw somebody in jail. What it does is it says, let's have a bunch of members of the House of Representatives call people before Congress and have testimony and have hearings on this topic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as such, it seems innocuous and non-toxic, but I absolutely agree with you that the language of it is not non-toxic, and just getting that out there should be ringing alarm bells for everybody.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm opposed to it, but now I believe it's passed. You know, it passed the House.
It was October that it passed the House.
Right. I don't know if it went through the Senate or not, or if it's been signed into law by the President. But even if it is, then all it does is it calls for hearings, and that actually may be a good thing in a perverse kind of way, because if those hearings were to be held, that would be an opportunity for people to come in and say, what the hell are you talking about? And why did you write this bill this way?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not quite as worried about it as I know, you know, the things that worry me a whole lot more, like, you know, the presidential directives that say that the president could declare martial law,
yeah,
or the fact that Karl Rove is thumbing his nose at Congress, or the fact that the Mukasey, who I think should be impeached, is refusing to enforce congressional subpoenas. I mean, the fact that the President Bush now can wiretap anybody he wants and is no doubt listening in on all the Democrats. The Republican Party, in my opinion, is now, this is what Nixon, this was Nixon's dream. Actually, it was Nixon's action, and they've got this. And I think it's just an absolute tragedy. Carol, I got to move along, but thank you for bringing it up. I appreciate it. Good point. Ian in Charlottesville, Virginia, WVAX. Hey, Ian.
Hi, Tom. I read your book, Last Hours, Ancient Sunlight, and you theorized or proved that the discovery of ancient sunlight caused human population to move into city centers. So now that we're moving towards having less and less of those resources available to us, What do you propose is going to be, you know, the movement of human populations? Is it going to be from cities to surrounding areas, and then?
I don't think so. And the book didn't posit cities, the growth of cities as the result of oil, but rather the growth of human population. I pointed out that the carrying capacity of the planet before oil was between 500 million and 1 billion people. And that oil, because we're basically eating oil, oil driving the tractors, oil driving the trucks, oil moving the food, oil, you know, turning the earth, tilling the earth, oil making fertilizers, oil making pesticides, oil making herbicides, oil packaging, you know, all these things that we're basically eating oil. And that has allowed the carrying capacity of the planet in terms of humans to hit, you know, we're pushing 7 billion now, although I'd say we've exceeded the carrying capacity because we're wiping out species and to the point that the ecosystem is being badly damaged. But in any case, I think that the problem is not a lack of energy. The problem is too much reliance on oil because it's destroying our atmosphere, it's destroying our oceans, and we need to be having wind power and solar power. There are ways that we can lessen our footprint, and we need to radically reduce the human population on Earth. I mean, the human population on Earth, really, in my opinion, you know, looking at this really carefully, shouldn't be more than about 3 billion people, which sounds like, you know, gee, that's more than, you know, that's half of all the planet just vanishing tomorrow. But 3 billion people is the number of people who were on this planet the year that Jack Kennedy was inaugurated as president of the United States. It's and the planet was well populated at that point in time. So,
well, so let me just ask this. So say we harness, you know, wind, water, solar power. Is it going to be most beneficial for humans to live in city centers where they can have better access to that power supply as it's
I think it may well be. It may be less toxic for the earth around us, you know, for us to leave wild spaces around us. The key, frankly, Ian, isn't, you know, what kind of energy are we using or how do we do it or the technology. It's our thinking. As long as we continue to think that we're somehow separate from nature and we ignore our interconnectedness with nature, we're gonna harm ourselves regardless of the energy supply. If we simply replace oil with solar, it could be a problem. Thanks for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Six six three oh three 2270, our telephone number. And Dale in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC. You're on the air, Dale. What's up?
Yes, sir. I appreciate you greatly in the education that you're doing. Along with that, you, like everybody else, I'm sure gets lots of silly emails that don't mean anything. But what if it was used as a tool? A lot of the information, like historical items like the Boston Tea Party, like you brought up in your book, Unequal Protection, and the fact that historically this happened and how does it correlate to today's times, and things that are in the news that are twisted, and be able to, you know, because if you get an email from somebody that you know, you're more likely to forward it to another friend, and it could spread like wildfire and educate people to really what's going on.
Yeah, and that's one possibility. The other is there. I am convinced that there is a boiler room someplace with, you know, Karl Rove types. There's a couple of, you know, very sick and twisted and highly very smart and manipulative sociopathic individuals who are coming up with these right wing emails that sound so convincing. You know, oh, I was a soldier and Barack Obama walked by and I was the white guy and I was standing next to a black guy and he just sneered at me and shook the black guy's hand. And I'm Army Specialist Joe Blow. And, you know, it just sounds so like, gee, this must be real. And all of a sudden, boom, the thing goes viral and every Republican in the country is reading it. And for example, I mean, that's the one I got yesterday, you know, and it's like every day there's a new one. And, you know, I went to school with Michelle Obama, and I remember her, you know, and I don't even want to repeat most of these things, except for the fact that I know that people who are conservatives or on conservative listservs or mailing lists are getting zillions of these things. And I think that that's one of the things that is driving this swing in the polls. And the problem is, you know, I on one occasion replied to one of these things because there was like, you know, 60 people in the distribution list. I just did a reply all. And all of a sudden I've got all this, you know, it's just, I ended up having to put everybody on my twit filter, you know, because it's like, oh, how dare you? We don't want to hear from you. And it's just, but it's somehow we have to figure out a way to push back. And I'm not, by the way, seeing the same kind of stuff being said about John McCain in left-wing emails. And, you know, which I suppose is a good thing. You know, it means that we're relatively honorable. People are not, you know, trashing Cindy McCain for having been a drug addict or something. I mean, that one went around for a little while, like, you know, 6 months ago, but that was it. And in fact, I think it was Republicans who were distributing that, probably from the Giuliani campaign when McCain was still running in the primary. But since the Republican primary is over, I have not seen the level of vitriol and trashing of him going on. So, Dale, we've got to figure out a way to push back. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Rick in Erie, Pennsylvania. Hey, Rick.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Myself and a few friends, we have bought these Prius cars, and we like them very much. And we were surprised to see an article in a local paper here. It goes out to a lot of seniors. It talks about the risks of driving a hybrid. It claims that it's comparable to the cancer risks of living near high-voltage utility lines due to the electromagnetic fields. And the sources they put on here is, one is the April 27 article in the New York Times, and the second one is Hybrid Vehicle Owners Report Adverse Health Effects, Heartland Institute, July 1, 2008.
Heartland Institute. We've had people on from the Heartland. Go to sourcewatch.org if you want to get. I mean, that's another one of the think tanks funded by the right wing and by the oil companies.
It is.
Yeah, and so it's, but you're right. I mean, this is the kind of weird, toxic stuff that they put out that has no connection to reality and that is just, you know, hey, you know, buy another big SUV. The funny thing about it is that there are some you know, American automakers are making some very large hybrids now and you know, they get better gas mileage. Now, it's just nonsense, Rick, and I would just treat it as such. I just leave it at that. Joe in Los Angeles. Hey, thanks for the call. Joe in Los Angeles on K-Talk. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom? You requested a soundbite for Obama to respond to Katie Couric.
Yeah.
And on the surge, we know what the purpose of the surge was. So the soundbite would go something like this. The purpose of the surge was political reconciliation between factions. That reconciliation hasn't taken place and won't until we leave.
Right. That's, you know, and that's what they were saying. Actually, that was the soundbite that by and large was being used up until recently. But she's asking the question directly, you know, it's led to the reduction of violence, as if that's the new indicator. It's like the goalposts keep getting changed. But spot on, Joe, well said. Mike in Clinton, Michigan. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, yeah, great show. I try to get you as much as I can, but a great guy out there would be for Vice President Jim Webb out of Virginia.
Jim Webb's got a couple of skeletons in his closet with regard to comments that he's made about both women and gays back when he was the Secretary of the Navy. And I don't think that they could, I think particularly after Hillary Clinton lost the nomination, there's so many women who got very involved in the campaign and feminist issues have become a piece of this. And even if they hadn't, frankly, I think that that's a real weakness for him. On the other hand, you're right. He does bring, you know, really good military cred to the campaign. Some people may be big fans of Jim Webb. I think he's a decent senator. But I wouldn't put him on the list. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
We Here's some travel opportunities for you if you're in Madison, Wisconsin. A week from today, and really a week from tomorrow, I'll be speaking at the Nonstop Radio Symposium in the Exhibition Hall at the Alliant Energy Center. This is nonstopradio.com, along with our affiliate station in Madison, the Mic, 92.1 WXXM. On August 16th, I'll be in Seattle, Washington, AM 1090, Progressive Talk KPTK, and it's called Looking Forward, Moving Forward, What Now?, a roundtable forum. Me and a whole group, a bunch of great talk show hosts, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. in the Seattle Center Exhibition Hall. I'll be on Radio Row at both the Democratic and Republican conventions with our affiliates AM 760, Colorado's Progressive Talk in Denver, and in Minneapolis with AM 950, WTNF, the Voice of Minnesota. And November 16th through the 23rd, Louise and I will be on the Air America cruise. That's sailing the 16th through the 23rd of November. That'll be about 3 weeks after the election. Hopefully we'll be celebrating the election of Barack Obama. If not, we will be spending a lot of time at the bar. And this is the Holland America Lines Luxurious MS Vindam. And it's stopping in Belize. These are places I've never been before. I'm really looking forward to this one. In Belize, in Santo Tomas de Castilla, Guatemala, and in Costa Maya, Mexico. So hang out with us. I'll be there. I believe Rachel Maddow is going to be there. There's going to be a few other folks. Mark Green, Bob Schrum. Dine with folks, attend private seminars, Q&A sessions, book signings, the whole thing. Space is limited. And you can get the information over at AirAmericaCruise.com. Bruce Fein is the former Associate Deputy Attorney General in the Reagan administration, 81-82. This guy was a lawyer, the number two guy in the Department of Defense, or excuse me, of Justice, Deputy Attorney General. And he testified today before John Conyers Commission. Here's a couple of clips of Bruce Fein in his testimony today.
Now, it was said by a previous speaker that all presidents have flouted law during wartime. But I think, number one, it's incorrect as a historical matter. But number two, this particular war is different than all others because it's permanent. It will never end. The definition of an end is when there will never be anyone who threatens an American with a terrorist incident in any way in the Milky Way. No one has even conceived of a benchmark that says the war is over. So this is permanent war. Exactly what James Madison said was inconsistent with freedom.
Yeah, and you'll find actually a whole chapter devoted to that Madison quote in my book, We the People. Here's Bruce Fein with regard to presidents who spied.
With regard to presidents who spied, it's certainly true that they spied without warrants and had abuses. That's what led to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. It's one thing for a president to act when there's no express congressional prohibition. It's quite another to say, we don't care what Congress has said. The law is irrelevant to me. I can act on my own initiative.
See, we're back to...
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Right. Mayor Rocky Anderson talking about the administration.
We were not told, for instance, besides some of the reports that were noted before, about the dissents by the intelligence agency within the State Department and by the Department of Energy. Their statements in the October National Intelligence Estimate that said there is nothing to back this up about these aluminum tubes being used to help Iraq's supposed nuclear initiative, and there certainly is nothing to this claim about Iraq trying to buy uranium from Niger. It was right there in the National Intelligence Estimate. The president, high-ranking members of the administration, as they were telling we, the American people, and you, the Congress, just the opposite, failed to disclose those dissenting opinions from the State Department and the Department of Energy. That constitutes a fraud which helped lead this country to this disaster in Iraq.
That was Mayor Rocky Anderson. This is all testimony before John Conyers Committee, the House Judiciary Committee, today, based on the hearings, based on Dennis Kucinich's article of impeachment. Here's Bob Barr.
Many years ago, some of us older folks like yourself and myself recall we had a nuclear clock that would count down how close we were to nuclear Armageddon. And then back in the 1990s, I recall the national debt clock that would count up the amount over time of the national debt. Mr. Chairman, what we're facing now is a constitutional clock, and it is counting down what remains of the Constitution of this great land.
Yeah, well said. Bob Barr, the Libertarian presidential candidate. Matt in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, listening on WINS. Hey, Matt, what's on your mind today?
A couple things, and I'll keep it very brief. I wanted to tell you that I bought Vincent Bugliosi's book a couple of weeks ago, one of the big chains, and I was so motivated to buy it, but scared to put it on my credit card that I paid cash. And this is in America.
That's the other a bad thing sign.
And it's a great book, by the way, and it just verifies everything that we've been hearing on your show.
Yeah.
The thing I wanted to comment about is that I really fail to see, and please use your imagination on this comment, remind me what's wrong with Europe liking our president?
Yeah, well, unless you call French fries freedom fries, There's nothing wrong with it. Excellent point, Matt. Thank you very much. And yeah, we live in weird times. I mean, we live in very weird times. Liz in Valley Glen, California. Hey, Liz.
Hi, good morning, Tom. Thanks for those excerpts from the hearings.
You're welcome. And thanks to Sean Taylor, our producer, for chopping up that audio on the fly during our program. She's doing a great job.
But you're looking for a pushback video? I have the perfect one if you can find somebody who has the a tape of the April 22nd Today Show when Laura Bush was on there. And I watched it while I was listening to you. I had it on mute because I was hoping to see some impeach Bush signs.
Mm-hmm.
But lo and behold, you went to a commercial, and little Jenna was on there, and she was pushing her book. And at the end of the interview, Ann Curry just said to her, "So who do you like for president?" And Jenna just very innocently says, "Oh, Obama looks really good."
Yeah.
And Laura just about was beside herself.
Yeah.
I mean, she put on her ballet shoes and her little tutu and was dancing around there. But if somebody could find that video, that would make a great election campaign ad for TV.
Yeah, that is a good comeback. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Liz. That's definitely a good one. Caleb in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Caleb, what's on your mind today?
Hey, you know, a comeback I think would be, so Murtha was right. Remember Jack Murtha said, hey, if we let the Iraqis do it, they'd cast out Al-Qaeda themselves.
That's right.
Murtha is absolutely correct about that.
Yep.
Tom, you know, I've been on the V-Dam. It's a wonderful ship. My wife and I passed out questionnaires on board once. It provided a week, and it was a beautiful ship. So
this is the ship that we're doing on the Air America Cruise, AirAmericaCruise.com.
Absolutely, it's a beautiful ship. You know,
great.
One thing that really bothers me is the sort of the plans that the right-wing think tanks have.
Mm-hmm.
That is, they think of these things in secret, and then when something bad happens, you know, Naomi says the disaster capital, these people dust off these things. They appear to have face validity. That is, they look like they're believable, and then they're implemented. And then people just say, well, you got a plan, you thought it out, let's give it a shot. And that just drives me crazy that the right-wing think tanks are able to do that.
Yeah, well, it's the psychology of the lowest common denominator in pushing it out. Hopefully we will get past that. I think that we got past that with the Kennedy administration. I think Jack Kennedy brought a new level of discourse, and we celebrated the fact that we had an elite intellectual as president. We celebrated it.
Yeah, I know.
People said, "Oh, yeah, Jack Kennedy. Yeah, it's Camelot."
He's also beloved by the Germans. I mean, you know.
Yeah,
Kennedy,
exactly, I mean, exactly. And then you get the white racists here who go, he's an elite. He's arrogant. And I think it's just. I've said this before, in my opinion, that a lot of this criticism, if Barack Obama was a white guy and a rich white guy, it would be they'd be talking about Camelot again, and now instead they're talking about uppity, only they're using words that are code for that, in my opinion. Caleb, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. It's downright strange. Michael in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Michael.
Hi, Tom. A big fan. I just wanted to ask you if you had this pep talk for people like me who are kind of getting a little bit down. Originally a Hillary supporter, switched to Barack because I thought he had great policies and great points. And, you heard that Hillary said he can't win. And no matter what he seems to do, he can't win. And like what you just said with the last caller about there being him being called an elitist or whatever, I think you get my point. So,
yeah.
And I'm a little nervous by the fact that in the swing states, the polls seem to be switching to show that McCain's gaining momentum, even after a week or two of incredible gaffes. And I'm really getting really disenchanted, and I've given a lot of money to him, and I don't know what to think. I'm getting very nervous, to be honest with you.
I don't think we should be... There's a couple things going on. Number one, there's this whisper campaign that's going on in email that we need to be dealing with, we need to be responding to, we need to be calling it out, and we need to figure out, you know, frankly, I think the Obama campaign has to figure out a way to respond to it. Number two, let's keep in mind, 80% of Americans, and that's a charitable number, it's probably more like 90% of Americans, but at least 80% of Americans are not paying any attention at all to politics right now. They're gonna notice when the, you know, in a couple of weeks when the conventions are held, and they're gonna notice, they're really gonna start paying attention in October. And so I really wouldn't worry about the polls right now. Although what this says is to me, Michael, is that we need to be getting out there and volunteering to do canvassing, going door to door, knocking on doors. So when people say, well, I've gotten a lot of emails about this, you can just face to face, person to person, you know, rebut that stuff.
Well,
Michael, thanks a lot. I'm sorry, Michael. I didn't realize you were going to say something, but we've got to move along into the break here. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
The Tom Hartman Program. Visit us on the web at hartmanradio.com.
Hey, thanks. Thanks to my parents for birthing me. thanks to whatever created this universe or I am just so grateful to be alive. Thanks so much to my wife, Louise Hartman, our producer, Sean Taylor, who works so hard to make this program work, Chris Rosen and Lauren Kirchner in New York, and Marcus Hillman, who work so hard there in New York to make the program work, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room. Sue is dancing her heart out for us every day. Mike Toth, who does such a marvelous job with our audio archives on our website. And it's a lot of hard work Mike puts into it every single day. To our affiliates, who are all working as hard as they can to make their radio stations work well. Our sponsors, and to you in particular. We wouldn't even have a show if you weren't listening to our program. Thank you. Just a couple of quick pieces of audio here from today's hearings. This Vince Bugliosi, the prosecutor, the Helter Skelter, author of Helter Skelter, successfully prosecuted, as I recall, 107 out of 109 capital murder cases when he was the L.A. prosecutor, prosecuted Charlie Manson, and the author of numerous books, his most recent, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. This is Vincent Bugliosi testifying today before the House of Representatives Committee of the Judiciary, John Conyers Committee, on Dennis Kucinich's resolution for impeachment.
January 31st, 2003, less than 2 months before Bush ordered the invasion of Iraq, on the rationale that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country, so we had to strike first in self-defense. Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair met in the Oval Office with six of their top aides, including Blair's chief foreign policy advisor, David Manning. After the meeting, Manning prepared a five-page memo stamped extremely sensitive, summarizing what was said at the meeting. He wrote that George Bush, not Blair now, George Bush, was so worried about the failure of UN inspectors to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that he talked about three possible ways to, quote, provoke a confrontation, unquote, with Hussein, one of which was to, quote, this is quoting George Bush, quote, fly U-2 reconnaissance aircraft over Iraq, painted in United Nations colors, and if Hussein fired on them, Bush said, he would be in violation of UN resolutions, and this would justify our going to war. So Bush is telling the American people, telling the world, that Hussein is an imminent threat to the security of this country, but behind closed doors, George Bush was talking about how to provoke Hussein into a war.
And Bugliosi wraps it up by saying,
if George Bush honestly believed that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country, which is the main reason he gave the American people for going to war, the thought of provoking Hussein into a war, by definition, would never, ever, ever have entered his mind. And I say this, that by taking this nation to war on a lie, all of the killings of American soldiers in Iraq became unlawful killings and therefore murder.
Therefore a murder. And George Bush is therefore a murderer. Vincent Bugliosi, the guy who prosecuted Charlie Manson. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us. Hey, Ellen, what's up?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, even under the Clinton administration, Hussein was playing footsie with the U-2s, trying to sort of what they call light them up in terms of locking radar or whatever availability he had on them. But nobody paid any attention to the Clinton. People just thought he was like being a, you know, ridiculous.
Yeah, being a jerk, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that today several of the Democrats said many times that this was not an impeachment hearing. This was a hearing to analyze the White House's abuse of power.
Right.
Maurice Hinchey from New York State, Upper New York State, said that the Secretary of Defense really tried to let Bin Laden go so that he would escape, so that they would have a reason, because once they got Bin Laden, they wouldn't have a reason for the war.
Right.
So they sort of let him go into Tora Bora, et cetera, knowing that if they let him go, that they could then focus on Iraq. And he said that he believes that they intentionally let him go. Kucinich kept on saying today that this was a pre-war justification on a false decision, and Congress made this on basically false information. The Republicans kept calling it impeachment light.
Yeah, yeah, which it is.
Lamar Smith, he called the first thing on Scott McClellan, the first book club today, he called it an anger management session.
Yeah.
A lot is being made of McCain's speech, not necessarily what he is saying in Denver today, but the speech, a lot of people feel that he came off as very, very angry today. And that he just seems to be seething about Obama's success in Europe and the Middle East.
Well,
and
you know what? Here's what I don't understand, Ellen. Why would McCain's campaign set up a press opportunity for him
in a German restaurant?
In a German, with six people. In a German restaurant opposite. I thought that it came from The Onion when I first read this thing. The week before that, it was supposed to be, you know, in an oil rig off the coast of Louisiana, in an area that it turns out the oil spills were so bad during Hurricane Katrina that the coast still stinks of crude oil. And I think that they called it off at the last minute because they realized that was the case. And if the press got down there, they'd smell it.
You know, I just have to say, I was not very happy about some things Obama's press people did, but the McCain people, if I were rewriting my book, which I don't have time to do, I would use this week of McCain as an example of what not to do.
Yeah, well said. Ellen Ratner, TalkRadioNews.com. Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
Coming up Monday, Dr. Michael Ledeen, the American Enterprise Institute, and Kerry Lucas, and, of course, the best of the rest of the news and your calls. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. It all starts with each one of us getting active. Tag, you're it. See you on Monday. Have a great weekend.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.